organic to you. Down here, I mean. More so than above ground level. The tunnels remind me of the...
Be quiet!
They both stopped abruptly at the faint sound of struggling servos. Their lamps picked out an opening low in the smooth wall of the tunnel, almost capillary-like. Tebakai made a show of not seeing the similarity with what Obadei had just been saying, and closed the vox link with a grin.
Well volunteered, brother. Get down that gap and snag the drone. Forget our poor measurements. The data in that servitor could be 10, 20, 100 times more useful. We'll drag it back to the surface and let the warsmith do whatever it is he does with it all. Tebakai and Obadei, the heroes of Sotha.
Obadei shook his head.
You're an idiot.
Tebakai shrugged.
I'm not the one crawling down a tiny hole in the guts of a Xenos machine on the edge of known space. Mind how you go.
Obadei handed his bolt gun off and eased himself head first into the opening, Tebakai lowering him as far as he could by the bootstraps. Then, bracing with his elbow pads, he scraped and slid his way down the steep angle of the crawl space, his lamp all but useless against the glassy black rock, towards the unmistakable sound of the stuck servitor.
It's a good job you kept on chirping, you old clanker. Otherwise, we would never have found you in the dark.
Eventually, the crawl space opened out. Obadei caught a gasp before it could leave his throat. The drone was perched on the edge of an abyss, no more than 4 paces away from him, its tracked feet moving weakly back and forth in the emptiness beyond. How it had not simply fallen, he could not begin to guess. Vertigo gripped at Obadei's stomach as he inched forwards. His dual heartbeat began to thump in his chest. Beyond the ledge in front of him, there was simply nothing. No distant rocky walls, no suggestion of light, no physical object that even his enhanced vision could pick out. This space, whatever it was so unimaginably vast that he had difficulty reconciling its existence with what he knew about the geographical layout of Mount Pharos. It just seemed too big to fit under the mountain in any literal sense. The warsmith would have to revise his calculations. No wonder they had lost so many of the drones down here. Tebakai's voice came faintly down the crawl space after him.
Have you got it?
Obadei gingerly pulled himself up and knelt beside the drone. Its power cells were at less than 1%, but its mapping memory was reading as almost full.
Yes, I've got it! I'm going to shut it down first so we don't risk data coil corruption.
As the servitor's systems lapsed into hibernation, its feet went still. Only then did Obadei realize just how completely silent this immense space was. He clapped his gloved hands together, but the sound cast no echo. He shook his head and pulled the rappel line from his harness, fastening it to the servitor's chassis. He wouldn't risk losing it on the climb back up to Tebakai.
I'm coming now!
Tebakai's reply was too faint for him to hear. Obadei heaved the servitor around as carefully as he could. Then he paused at the crawl space opening. He cast a glance back over his shoulder. His curiosity got the better of him, and he reached for the ranging marker on his hip. Aiming blindly, he watched the pale thread of light flick out into the impenetrable darkness. The marker's voice became distorted. Then Obadei flinched as the emitter burst out with a firecracker bang and a shower of sparks. He twisted, putting out a hand to catch himself. But his fingers closed on nothingness. His balance lurched to one side, and he kicked harder than he meant to in reflex. He sprawled outwards, and he fell. Obadei's wordless cry was deadened by the abyss. There was nothing around him in any direction to reach out for. The rappelling line spooled out at an alarming rate, doing nothing to arrest his fall. Panicking, he flailed, reaching, grasping for the catch on his harness that would engage the braking gears. Before he could find it, the line struck taut.
Ah!
The sudden halt was agonizing. He felt both of his shoulders wrench from their sockets, the left one popping immediately back in as he sprung half a dozen feet back upwards on the end of the rappel. The air was torn from his winded lungs. The broken ranging marker slipped from his grasp and tumbled down into the infinite void beneath him. Obadiah hung there, gasping and whimpering in pain, like a crushed arachnid on the end of its final silken thread. He hung there for a long time. He did not like to question how the servitor had remained tethered back up on the ledge, saving him from an endless plunge into who even knew where. Nor did he like to question how long it would be before it toppled over after him, joining him in oblivion. His arms were numb and limp. He was all but helpless. His only hope was that Tebekai would have been so startled by his cries that he might dare venture down the crawl space after him and haul him back up. A slim hope. Tebekai seemed to be as dumb as a bag of rocks when it truly mattered. Even Chryseos, who the rest of the cohort often mocked for his slow wits, would occasionally show him up in training exercises. Obadiah laughed thinly at that thought, tears stinging his eyes. He had the impression that his vision was swimming before him, except that there was nothing but impenetrable blackness above and below. At least when he screwed his eyes shut, he was rewarded with a brief riot of color behind his eyelids to let him know that at least he hadn't gone blind. He could feel unconsciousness rising in him. His underdeveloped transhuman body was shutting down in response to the pain. He tried to call out, his tongue feeling thick in his mouth.
Tebekai! Brother!
In the void beneath him, something stirred. A presence, an intelligence of sorts. It was ancient and cold and incomprehensibly alien. A wave of disorienting nausea passed over him. Not fear. No, nothing like that.
They shall know no fear.
It was something else. Obadiah felt himself being regarded in the way that a Sothan Phantine might regard a fire ant, or a man might regard an amoeba. Other worldly voices whispered to him in languages he did not understand.
No, no fear. No, no fear. No, no fear.
Gritting his teeth against the agonizing pain in his shoulders, he forced himself around in the harness. He managed to turn his head just enough, to glimpse that ancient, cold, alien presence. And he screamed. He saw the truth at the heart of the Pharos, and he saw what was coming to Sothan. And it saw him. Tebekai sagged. His eyes moved to each of the three legionary centurions in turn, anxious for their approval, though he did not allow his gaze to remain long on the other figures beyond the communication field.
That's everything, my lords. That was when we brought him up and gave him over to Apothecary Taricus. I don't know what it was that happened to him down there, but he was barely conscious.
Tebekai wrung his fingers plaintively.
He was saying things. Strange things.
From the other side of Ultramar, the voice of a Primarch reached Mount Pharos.
What was it, Neophyte? What did young Obadiah say?
Tebekai's face twisted. He trembled before the quiet, assured power of that voice.
My lord, I cannot tell a lie. He kept crying out, "They see our light! They see our light!" Sergeant Arcus asked him who, but we couldn't make him tell us.
Warsmith Dantioch ambled over to him, his power-armored joints wheezing, and he placed his gauntleted hands upon the youth's shoulders.
Just as Arcus said in the report,
You've done well here today, Neophyte Tebakai. You are a credit to your company and your legion.
Captain Adalus managed to catch Dantioch's eye. The warsmith glared back at him through the sockets of his iron skull mask, but Adalus would not be made to look weak before the Primarch.
That is open to some debate, warsmith. Tebakai and the rest of the cohort will be...
There's something more. Something that can't be in the report.
Adalus froze at Tebakai's interruption.
What?
Obadiah whispered something to me, and Sergeant Arcus didn't know about it. I'll never forget what he said, though. I'm sure of that. No one could forget it.
Even Dantioch was taken aback.
Tell us, lad.
Tebakai narrowed his eyes.
He said that they are out there. Now, in the dark between the stars. And again, he said that they see our light.
No one spoke. Even the machinery tended by Captain Pollux seemed to hush its mechanical chatter. From his throne on distant Macragge, it was Lion L. Johnson himself, Primarch of the First Legion, that broke the silence.
And what do you think that means, Tebakai?
The neophyte shuffled awkwardly.
Forgive me, Lord, but I know you met my brother before when you were here on Sotha. He talked about it a lot. It was him who saw the coming of Emperor Sanguinius in his dreams. So maybe this was a new vision. Something bad.
Dantioch moved back to his own chair, but did not sit.
We have yet to fully explore the various incidental empathic projection phenomena associated with the Pharos, though the locals seem to accept it well enough. They call it mountain dreaming.
The Lion nodded.
Indeed. I heard Obadiah's original prophecy with my own ears.
Adalus stood tall.
You will send more legionary forces to us as a precaution then, my lord. We can accommodate another company on the orbital platform, and any number of ships at defensible anchorage points within the system. That's before we even land anything onto the planet itself.
The Primarch fixed him with an intense gaze.
We will not be landing anything on Sotha, Captain, because I am not sending any more legionary forces to you.
Dantioch twitched. Adalus made to reply, but thought better of it. The Lion went on.
There is a whole company of Ultramarines guarding the system, plus the orbital platform itself, and a constant rotation of ships from at least three legions. We have been over this before, thanks to Captain Pollux. And my previous decision still stands. I will not draw attention to Sotha by blockading it with my fleet.
He nodded to Dantioch again.
Never mind the Ajita Company. The greatest shield you have there, Warsmith, is the appearance of being completely and utterly insignificant. As unsettling as Obadiah's feverish words might have been for his neophyte brethren, I hear nothing like the certainty in them that I did the first time. This was not a prophecy, it was just a bad dream.
The Lion leaned back into his seat. Dantioch bowed. The movement causing him some noticeable discomfort.
Of course, I shall defer to your tactical wisdom, Lord Johnson. If you are satisfied that Sotha and the Pharos remain safe, then that is... Indeed, that is all. Captain Adalus, you are to inform Sergeant Arcus and his scout cohort, including Tebakai and Obadiah, when he can be roused from the apothecary. But I would commune with them again, directly. In the meantime, all of these matters here discussed are to be considered of the utmost secrecy. Let none speak of them. All face my wrath.
My lord, it shall be done.
With a gloaming sigh, the communication field faded, leaving the Convincus Cubicularum in a cold, pensive silence. The lion remained seated, gazing into the now empty air, one finger tapping absently upon the arm of the throne. Holguin, voted lieutenant of the Deathwing, waited as long as was seemly before stepping forward to relight the chamber's lamps.
Leave them.
My lord?
We shall not remain here. The hour is late, and I suspect we have already drawn the attention of my brother's guardians in this unscheduled contact with Sothar.
As you wish. What will you tell Lord Gilliman of these events? Or the Emperor Sanguinius?
I have no intention of telling either of them anything.
Holguin shifted uneasily.
But the neophytes?
The Primarch shrugged, dismissing the lieutenant's concern with a flick of his hand.
There is nothing to tell. I did not hear evidence of any credible threat to the 13th Legion operation on Sothar, far less the security of the palace here. Like as not, the whole story is just fanciful suggestion, amplified in the minds of those boys by that damned mountain. I cannot explain any of what they claim to have witnessed, but equally, I cannot see that it gives me any cause to investigate further.
He rose, holding out his bare hands to the Deathwing warriors standing nearby. They brought him his gauntlets, his weapon belts, and war helm. As he fastened the clasps at his wrists, Holguin also stepped forwards, bearing the mighty lion sword, and the Primarch gave him a knowing look.
Besides, when have you ever known me to offer anyone the whole truth unasked for? I will not lie, but I will not play Rabute's game of Imperium Secundus with an open hand.
Holguin handed him the blade.
I see the wisdom in it. A truth unspoken is the coin of tomorrow, is it not?
Just so. Regardless, we have far more pressing matters to attend to.
The hunt continues as planned, then. You intend to keep searching for the Nighthaunter in secret.
A tremor flickered beneath the lion's right eye at the mention of the name, and he gripped the hilt of the sheathed sword tightly.
The hunt will never end. Not until I have him, Holguin. Broken or in chains, begging for his miserable, worthless life.
He tilted his head, cricking the tension from his neck.
And then I'll gut him.
While that would be a righteous and justified act, I feel honor-bound to remind you that Gilliman appointed you Lord Protector, not Chief Executioner.
The lion's glare turned icy.
Have a care, little brother. Those who question my judgment soon wish they hadn't. Conrad Kurz is an evil from which the entire galaxy needs protecting. He has no place in a sane, ordered universe. Would you not agree with that at least, my voted lieutenant?
Holguin bowed his head.
Of course, my liege. The other legions are more than a match for the traitor warband still scattered throughout Ultramar. The Deathwing stands ready to serve you, and you alone.
Then send word to the fleet. Triple encryption. We leave before dawn. The flagship and her attendant flotillas will remain on station over Macrag as a show of force. All other shipmasters and legionary captains are to expect new orders within the hour.
The Primarch took up his helm in the crook of his arm, and they strode side by side towards the grand doors of the chamber, the lion letting his cloak sweep behind him as he went. Holguin held out a finely wrought bolt pistol, pressing the grip into the Primarch's waiting hand.
And our destination, Lord. Where are we to resume the hunt for Kurz?
The lion smiled grimly to himself as the doors were thrown wide.
Wherever he is not on Sothar. Of that much, at least, we can be certain.
Thank you.
Children of Sicarus by Anthony Reynolds. Performed by Gareth Armstrong, John Banks, Tim Bentinck, Steve Conlin, Toby Longworth, and Penelope Rawlins. Beneath the malignant, writhing heavens of Sicarus, blood was spilled. The desolate plains were strewn with the dead and the dying. Some were human, most were not. Many were twisted amalgams of man and beast. Others were beings of immaterial flesh and darkness. One was a hulking, red-armored warrior of the 17th Legion, a holy son of Lorgar. He dropped to his knees, an immense rune-etched axe embedded deep in his chest. Before him loomed a bullish creature that stood half again as tall as a space marine, an immense brute with scarred sulfur-yellow hide. Three cold eyes blinked on either side of its wide head. The beast yanked its axe from the legionary's body and brought it round in a lethal arc. The word-bearer fell, his head struck from his shoulders. Cor Farrell, first captain of the Legion, the Black Cardinal and Master of the Faith, saw him fall. Warp light flashed within him, revealing his skull in sharp relief through emaciated, gray flesh.
The Primordial Annihilator, take you all!
He thrust out his hand, and coiling dark energy crackled from his splayed fingertips. It struck two hunched abhumans clutching primitive autoguns, hurling their bodies backwards. But the effort took its toll. Corferon sagged, blood bubbling from his lips. He would have fallen had not another word-bearer stepped in to catch him.
Master!
Acolyte! Marduk!
A third mutant ran, charged in, swinging a heavy, spike-tipped cudgel. Marduk lifted his bolt pistol, but another warrior stepped between them, killing the creature with a single, devastating blow. Nemkar. The warrior was part of the second generation of Gal Vorbak, legionaries whose souls were fused with the malignant entities of the Immaterium, a horrifying fusion of space marine and demon. With Nemkar, it was impossible to tell where rigid armor ended and flesh began. The Ceramite bled where blades and bullets had struck. Each of his own arms ended in great cleaving spines, and a crown of horns protruded from his helm. There was a sudden flash of unlight, and a demonic beast manifested, flopping onto the ground from a tear in reality itself. Blue-fleshed and gangly-limbed, it wore a scowl upon its malformed face, and etheric energy crackled around its multi-jointed hands. It detonated in a riot of color as Marduk shot it between its eyes, only to see it replaced by four smaller, burning imps that wove into the air, trailing fire.
We are killing them in droves, Master. But we cannot afford any further losses. We must end this skirmish quickly.
These are the lost and the damned. They are nothing to us.
He saw the massive horned beast kill another of his retinue, one of the mortal servants from the Infidus Imperator.
That one! That one must die! Kill it, Nemkar! By your will, Lord!
The Gal Vorbak warrior thundered through the melee, smashing the enemy from his path, making for the great beast. It saw his approach and turned to meet him, hefting its axe. But the beast swung too wide, and Nemkar sprang onto its broad back, talons digging into flesh. It dropped its weapon and grabbed him, but Nemkar had a hold of his prey now. Its end was inevitable. He wrapped his bladed arms around the base of its skull and twisted. Its bull-like neck was as thick as a contemptor's torso, but Nemkar's strength was far beyond that of a mortal being. The beast fell, and the enemy horde's will to fight was gone. What had been a battle became a slaughter. Moments later, it was over. More than 30 of the foe were dead, Yet three of the Word-Bearer's mortal slaves had also fallen, and the noble warrior of the Legion. Corpheron looked upon the survivors, Nemkar, Marduk, Burias, Koshar, Dol Arshem. So few. The haggard-looking human attendants and serfs huddled together, the gaunt Hierophant, Gamaya Deimos, and the word-singer Acleon among them. He'd not bothered to learn the others' names. They meant little to him. Half a dozen word-bearers and twice that number of mortals were all that remained. Their number was being whittled down by the demon world that should have been their sanctuary. Corpheron scowled and shrugged Marduk away. The master of the faith should, by rights, be long dead. Too old for the extensive surgery and gene manipulation required to make him a full-blooded space marine, Corpheron had, nonetheless, undergone extensive and painful augmentation to allow him to serve as Lorgar's first captain. His heavily modified suit of Terminator armor, the Terminus Consularis, had helped extend his lifespan far beyond that of a normal man, before his mastery of the warp had rendered it unnecessary. Even so, he should be dead. His primary heart was gone, torn from his chest by Rabute Gilliman, the thrice-accursed Primarch of the Ultramarines. Corpheron clung to life now only through sheer bloody-minded determination and the stubborn, unshakable strength of his faith. The power of the primordial annihilator infused him, worming through his veins and leaking from the corners of his eyes like black vapor. After Kalth, he had fled into the warp aboard his flagship. Escaping the vengeance of the 13th Legion and the eventual destruction of the Infidus Imperator, the gods had apparently delivered him here only to die a lingering, drawn-out death at the hands of Sicarus's demonic inhabitants. Wheezing, he limped to Nemkar's side. The Galvorbak warrior rose to his feet, bone blades withdrawing into his flesh. The Master of the Faith's gaze was drawn to the crumpled form of the monster at Nemkar's feet. Its neck was broken, its head twisted almost completely around, but it was not yet dead. Its gold-flecked eyes blinked in alarm, and pale blood leaked from slack lips.
Its life is yours, my lord.
Powerful sacrifice.
With some difficulty, Corpheron lowered himself to one knee. He drew his unholy ritual blade and held it to the beast's throat.
May the Octet receive this offering and hear my prayers. Grant me the strength I require.
But before he could act, Corpheron felt a surge of etheric power in the air, and the beast began to convulse. A face grew within the shuddering meat of its broad chest, pushing out with the dull crack of shifting bones. The face was aristocratic, with high cheeks and thin lips. A third eye opened upon its forehead, and it turned to look up at Corpheron.
I am Larazar, the voice of change and ruler of the Nine Clans. Already you have killed five of my champions, false speaker. Now, my favored and eldest son, Eroxenor, lies dying at your feet. This is a great insult.
We are the true bearers of the word. We have nothing to fear from you.
I will see you eat the words you bear, truly. Great shall be your suffering!
The face sank back into broken flesh, and the beast finally lay still. Skinless demons, raw and bloody, descended on leathery wings to feed on the carcasses of the fallen. Marduk glanced around.
What now, my lord?
In the distance, jagged red lightning split apart the sky, and Corpheron narrowed his eyes.
We move.
It was impossible to gauge the passage of time. No sun rose or fell on Sicarus. The world appeared to exist in a perpetual magenta glow, the sky burning in a hellish maelstrom. They might have been there for a matter of days. It might have been years. Every moment blurred together into an endless waking nightmare. One moment, they spied a great tower of twisted rock in the distance. Then it was already behind them. What was certain, however, was that they were being hunted.
I see them, Master. They are closing fast.
How many?
I can't be certain. Too many for us to face.
Have faith, Marduk. The Octet will show us the way forward.
Even as he spoke, a cliff face loomed out of the magenta haze ahead. With no frame of reference, neither its scale nor its distance could be discerned. Corferon glanced back. Their pursuers hurtled across the hellish landscape at tremendous speed. None touched the ground, yet they kicked up great lines of dust and debris in their wake. Some rode in gilded chariots that sliced through the air, pulled by sleek demonic entities limbed with blue fire. Others stood upon the back of blade-fringed discs, or were borne by nothing more substantial than roiling blue witch fire. Nemkar sneered.
Let me face them, my lord.
It would be your death, brother.
I am a soldier of faith. To die in service of the gods and the Legion would be a great honor.
No. You are the last of my chosen Galvorbak. Your place is by my side.
Nemkar bowed his head in deference to the master of the faith.
By your will, my lord.
A haze, the color of hemorrhaging blood, rolled across them, momentarily obscuring the looming cliffs. When it cleared, a single robed figure leaned upon a crooked staff less than 20 paces away. The word-bearers raised their weapons, though this apparition made no threatening move towards them.
Greetings, bearers of the word. I have been waiting for you.
We don't have time for this.
Corferon nodded to Marduk, and the acolyte squeezed the trigger of his bolt pistol. The figure wavered like the image on a pict viewer, disrupted by static. He disappeared, then rematerialized several meters away, completely unharmed. He pushed back his deep hood with one gnarled hand to reveal an old, weather-beaten face, framed by long, braided white hair. His forehead and cheeks bore ritual scars, and Corferon felt an itch in the back of his skull as he looked upon the symbols. There was something familiar in their shape.
Who are you?
I am the 87th reincarnation of the prophet Jepeth. Your appearance was foretold.
Foretold? By whom?
Come. The Kyrik adept, Larazar, seeks your end. But not all the clans have yet been subjugated to her will.
What do you gain by helping us?
A future. We are all children of Sicarus together.
Marduk stepped forwards impetuously.
Why should we trust you?
Because I have foreseen your future. I have seen you reunited with your golden lord.
There were gasps from the word-bearers and their mortal followers. The dark light within Corferon surged like a flame before the bellows.
What do you know of our Primarch?
We must be swift. Will you follow?
Hunger burned in Corferon's empty chest. He nodded.
Good.
The old prophet struck the ground with his staff, and they were suddenly standing at the base of the vast towering cliffs, reaching many hundreds of meters into the sky. There appeared to be no way through, however. The rock before them formed a solid wall.
Not all is as it may first appear on Sicarus. Such has ever been its way.
The prophet tapped the cliff face with his staff, and it rippled like the surface of a windblown lake. A narrow crack was revealed where none had existed before.
Come, my people await you.
They delved deep into the darkening chasm, following behind the old prophet as he led them along its twisting route. Corferon looked back. The entrance was still there, in the distance, and at the same time, it was not. The image of the crack was superimposed over solid rock, like two overlapping realities. The stone to either side of them was worked with inscriptions and pictograms showing warring nations, fire raining from the sky, and men with the heads of beasts.
Master, look!
One wall was covered with images of warriors in heavy armor, standing taller than men. While they were crude and worn by the passage of time, the distinct shapes of the pauldrons and helmets were instantly recognizable. One of the giants bore a book from which flames sprung, and while much of the mural's color had long since faded, it was still possible to see that once they had been painted a deep blood red.
As I said, we have been waiting for you.
For how long, old one?
The prophet shrugged.
My first incarnation painted these prophecies.
My brothers and I did not always wear red.
The old man shrugged again.
In my waking dreams, I always saw you as you are now. You walk a preordained path to glory.
Corferon scowled. The thought that every choice he had made over the centuries was predetermined was not one that sat well with his ego or his faith. Still, while prophecy was not something to be followed blindly, nor something that could be guaranteed, true prophecy was also not to be underestimated. The trick was knowing which prophecies to believe. He loomed over Jepeth. He could smell the cancer in the old man's bones, sense his flesh rotting slowly from the inside out. Aging was a vile, hateful thing. Corferon's own imperfect body was a constant reminder of that. The Black Cardinal took a wheezing breath, pushing his resentment deep within himself. He'd been doing it for so long, it came as easily as breathing.
Lead on.
It was an eerie sight that greeted the word-bearers when they finally emerged from the rock. A series of chasms intersected in a steep gorge open to the sky. The sheer cliffs were carved with stairs and primitive dwellings. The inhabitants, the children of Sicarus, crowded the gorge, standing in windows and doorways. Thousands of them watched in silence as the prophet, Jepeth, led the word-bearers towards the middle of the settlement. The only sound was the echoing wind and the vaguely unsettling whisper of bone chimes. Most of the people were robed and daubed in umber, their faces and arms tattooed with cult symbols and patterns that Corferon knew well. The similarity to those of the true faith of Colchis was undeniable. Marduk looked to the sky. A burning chariot pulled by demonic entities circled overhead, accompanied by a host of lesser demons that left burning blue fire in their wake.
How has this valley remained hidden?
In a flash of crimson lightning, Corferon saw an illusion of a cavern roof far overhead, at once there and not. He felt the touch of the warp upon this place.
Wards and magics. Only a powerful seer could penetrate them.
Could you?
Corferon glared at his acolyte.
No. Nor could any within our legion. Save Lorgar Aurelian himself.
Jepeth took them towards a rock spire in the center of the gorge. It rose for 100 meters, with carved stone stairs climbing to its peak.
The Fane of the Blessed! This is where the prophecy is housed. Come!
The crowds began to whisper as the word-bearers approached the spire. They reached out for Corferon, straining to touch his massive armored form. Nemkar growled.
Hold, Nemkar. They will not harm me. Look at them. They revere us as gods.
Not gods. Saviors!
Why do they thank me, prophet?
It is in recognition of what you will do, my lord. The children of Sicarus offer thanks for the salvation you bring.
The 6 word-bearers and Corferon's human servants climbed the stone steps, leaving the crowds behind. The enemy chariot streaked once more across the sky, scouring the land below.
The Kyriq adept Larazar searches for you still, but she cannot breach our illusions. She knows of the destiny I have predicted and seeks to prevent it from coming to pass.
What does she care for your dreams and divinations?
Your arrival signals her end, bearer of the word. She knows this, just as she knows the children of Sicarus will play a part in her demise. Long has she sought the destruction of my people, in the hope of cutting the strands of fate that will lead to her fall.
Show me this prophecy.
They continued until they came to a terraced platform. A smaller carved stairway rose up inside the fane. Jepeth stood aside, gesturing Corpheron forwards.
Nemka, with me. The rest of you remain here.
As you will it. My lord, I will join you as well.
No, Marduk, stay here. Be watchful.
Corpheron climbed painfully after Jepeth, with Nemkar at his back. The entrance to the fane was not meant for their armored bulk, and both were forced to stoop. Inside, all was darkness.
Cor Ignis!
At the prophet's word, sconces burst into flame. Corpheron took in the details of his surroundings. It was a claustrophobic, circular room, lined with columns chiseled in the likeness of leering demons. Every centimeter of the walls was engraved with writings and pictograms. Jepeth gestured for them to proceed deeper into the shrine. Scowling, Corpheron strode forward, ducking his head beneath an archway of skulls and entering the inner sanctum. His attention was instantly drawn to a shallow iron plate standing atop a pedestal. A knife lay upon the plate, and the Black Cardinal felt a surge of etheric power within him as he looked upon it.
It cannot be.
You know this weapon.
Corpheron lifted the dagger. It was a ritual knife with a curved, tapering blade and a coiling, serpentine hilt.
This is the ritual athem I gave to my adopted son back on Colchis. It belongs to the Lord of the 17th Legion, the Aurelian Lorgar. How did it come to be here?
It was left in preparation of this day.
Left by whom?
My lord.
Nemkar was staring at the images to the rear of the shrine. Still holding the athame, Corpheron joined him, squinting. Pictograms recounting everything that he and his warriors had done since arriving on Sicarus covered the wall. The images were simple things, yet the likeness of Corpheron and each member of his retinue was unmistakable. There was Nemkar, his body swollen with the demon sharing his form, his arms ending in claws and bone spines. And Marduk, his armor swathed in the robes of an acolyte. The novitiate, Burias, and the others. Corpheron's eyes flashed as he stared upon his own representation, with its age-lined face and sickly demeanor, and the heavy book chained at his waist. He saw their battles with demonic entities and warbands of chaos. He saw the death of Aroxenor and the enemy pursuing them across the surface of the demon world. He saw Jepeth, the image of the prophet leaning on his staff, and their approach to the carved city where they now stood, all protected by a grand illusion. Protected from the Kyriq adept, Larazar, whose minions had pursued them. She wore blue armor, and coiling flames held her aloft. Corpheron skipped ahead, moving to the final sequences. They showed word-bearers leading the children of Sicarus through a portal of fire, to be met on the other side by a golden-skinned giant bearing a spiked mace.
When will we rejoin the Primarch?
For the final battle.
We will stand alongside him on Terra.
It has been foretold.
Tell me how this will come to be. Tell me!
You already know. You hold the key to that future.
Corferon looked back, searching for an answer. He came to one particular image, and his eyes narrowed. It showed him plunging the ritual blade into his own throat and blood fountaining out. In that release, the gateway to Lorgar was opened.
What madness is this?
He realized that he appeared nowhere else. Indeed, it seemed in the later images that it was his acolyte Marduk who was leading the word bearers through the portal. It was Marduk who had the holy book chained to his waist.
Through your blood shall your kin be reunited with your golden lord. So it has been ordained.
Corferon stared at the images. Nemkar looked at him, his eyes blazing with faith renewed.
To die in service to the primordial truth and the Legion, my lord, it is a great honor.
And your sacrifice brings hope to many. You are a glorious martyr, my lord.
The master of the faith turned slowly. Warp light flickered in his hateful eyes.
My fate is my own. Nemkar, kill him.
What? You cannot defy the god's will!
My lord!
Kill him! Where does your loyalty lie, brother?
In my faith.
And in me?
Of course, my lord.
Good. Burn everything here, Galvorbak. And speak of this to no one.
Corferon emerged back into the light, with Lorgar's ritual blade concealed beneath his robe. His followers were looking up in alarm.
My lord, the wards!
The illusions concealing the valley from above were fading, leaving it exposed. Already, demons were circling overhead, filling the air with their screams.
Where is the prophet?
Dead. His prophecies were naught but lies.
As he spoke, the Black Cardinal glanced towards Nemkar, who had appeared from within the burning shrine. The Galvorbak warrior said nothing. Sorcerer's fire began to fall like burning rain. It streaked down amongst the Children of Sickness. All was panic below. The crowd scattered, trampling those unfortunate enough to fall in their haste to escape.
My lord, she is here!
A shining figure was descending in the fire. The Kyric Adept, Larazar, stood upon a spiked disc surrounded by flames of an ever-changing hue.
Do we shoot?
No, my young acolyte. Not yet.
Demons and other twisted minions in flying chariots descended with Larazar, regarding the word-bearers with disdain. Corferon stepped forwards to meet her nonetheless, his hands clenching to fists.
But be ready.
Larazar turned in his direction. She was tall and powerful, encased in fluted, electric blue armor of elegant design. She had three arms and bore a tall spear, its tip burning silently with an azure flame. Her helm was featureless and blank, yet Corferon felt her gaze upon him. His skin tingled as she drew closer. Once she might have been human. Now she was something else entirely. She stepped off her floating disc. Where she walked, life sprouted, grass and tiny flowers manifesting wherever her boots made contact with the stone. With one of her three hands, she pulled her helmet free. Her face was as he remembered it, the high cheekbones tinged blue and dark teardrop tattoos under her eyes. In place of hair, she had feathers, glossy black with an iridescent sheen. The third eye, ice blue and flecked with gold, rolled open upon her forehead.
This is an unexpected changing of the face, false speaker. My master is pleased. Countless futures are being rewoven even now.
I will forge my own future.
You are a selfish, singular creature. Your actions have unraveled countless destinies. And yet, I am intrigued.
She looked around, as if seeing her surroundings for the first time.
I have long sought this place. You have my thanks for revealing it to me.
The demons and mortal servants of the Kyriek Adept continued to circle, waiting upon the word of their mistress.
What is it you hope to achieve?
Immortality, of course. Subjugating this world is the final step towards that goal. The Prophet Jepheth blocked my ascendancy. Now, this obstacle is removed.
Corpheron could feel the gifts of the primordial annihilator upon her. Its touch bled from the warlord in palpable waves. She was close to demonhood, perhaps closer than she realized.
There is something about you. Let me offer you a proposal.
A pact?
Yes. One that will benefit us both. You will help me take this world and slay all who oppose me.
And in return?
Colchis is burning. Your beloved world of empty cathedrals and meaningless prayer.
Colchis has been destroyed.
You lie! She lies, brothers!
No, it is already aflame. Or it will be. Time is not the steady stream that mortal minds perceive. Either way, you will never return there. I offer you this promise. Help me ascend, and I will let you remain upon this world as my subjects. You will have my leave to remain here, even after I have departed.
Corpheron looked away, considering her offer. His gaze dropped to the cowering children of Sycharis, peering up from below.
The Golden One will be pleased that you have prepared the way. Sycharis will never burn like Colchis. You will have provided a bare sanctuary for him and the Legion when he needs it. And he will need it.
And the pathetic wretches that call this place home?
I will claim their flesh for the changer of the ways. Their prophecies will never be spoken again. Is that enough for you? Will we swear our pact?
We will.
Corpheron stepped forwards, offering his hand to seal the alliance in the ancient manner.
Then let it be so.
Her power was staggering. It surged from her like water from a burst dam. For a moment, the Black Cardinal saw Larazar as she might be. A figure of towering might, with great blue-sheened wings and coiling horns. The mortal members of Corpheron's retinue dropped to their knees, blood running from their eyes, ears, and noses. Upon the children of Sycharis, the effect was far more devastating. Men, women, and children twitched and screamed as their bodies reformed with sudden and uncontrollable change. Bones broke as limbs bent and were remade, then remade again. Flesh and tendons tore as anatomy twisted and contorted, and spines rolled back upon themselves as new limbs and blindly groping protuberances. Gibbering mouths, cackling and whooping, split torsos. Taloned, multi-jointed hands tore bodies apart from within, birthing repulsive pink-skinned demons that giggled and leered. Larazar stood with her arms held wide. In the throes of her power, she did not sense Corpheron looming behind her, the sacred dagger of Lorgar Aurelion clasped in his hand.
Did the gods not show you this future? Witch! Perhaps you are not as adept as you thought!
Corpheron held the warlord aloft as her lifeblood gushed from her throat. The etheric energy surging from her was redirected into the Black Cardinal, and he shuddered as it flowed up his arms. The servants of the Kyrick Adept, mortal and demon alike, screamed. Some tried to close on Corferon, talons and blades reaching, but he hurled them back with crackling arcs of black lightning.
Yes! Yes!
Darklight blazed within him. Steam rose from his flesh, and his eyes flared with witchfire. Finally, he dropped the wasted corpse of Larazar to the ground, and his exultant expression gave way to bitterness once more. As the last of her power bled from him, he became the same crippled, spiteful creature that he had always been.
The gods test me, but I will not be broken. This world is mine!
Corferon stood atop a rocky precipice, gazing upon the infinite vista of construction below. Already the great cathedrals and spires of worship were climbing towards the burning heavens. Soaring scaffolds and plunging foundations divided the land, and endless columns of slaves, bound by chains and lashed by black-clad overseers, toiled in the depths. Monstrous beasts dragged great loads of stone and iron, while bound demon hosts lifted arches and keystones into place with their potent magics.
It is a grand vision, my master.
The Black Cardinal eyed Marduk warily, even though he knew Jepeth's false prophecies were no more.
It is indeed. Our Lord Lorgar will be most pleased. Once we re-establish contact with the Legion.
But if the War Master is victorious, or has already won, will any of it be needed? If he succeeds and throws down the false rule of the Emperor, the war will be over.
Our part in Horus's plan is done for now, but the war will never be over. Such is the way of things. This world will be our refuge, our sanctuary. In the decades, the centuries, and millennia to come, Sicarus will be the place where we can lick our wounds and gather our strength. It will be our staging ground and the center of our faith. From here, we will wage a war against the universe and enforce the will of the Primordial Annihilator. For we are the bearers of the word and an eternity of blessed conflict awaits us.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.